الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا وعظيمنا وحبيب قلوبنا وشفيع نفوسنا أبي القاسم محمد، اللهم صل على محمد وعلى محمد. وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين وأصحابه الغر الميامين. الحمد لله الذي جعلنا من المتمسكين بولاية سيدي ومولاي علي بن أبي طالب، الحمد لله الذي هدانا لهذا وما كنا لنهتدي لولا أن هدانا الله. أما بعد، يقول الله في كتابه الكريم، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم: إن الذين جاءوا بالإفك عصبة منكم لا تحسبوه شرا لكم بل هو خير لكم. The first of our salawat in honor of Rasulullah Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam. The second in honor of Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali ibn Abi Talib. The third with your loudest voices in honor of the Imam of our time, Imam Sahib al-Asri wa al-Zaman. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad. I'm going to have to trouble you again upon the request. Please come closer to the front. One last call. Sallu ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad. Come closer on this side. Come as much as you can. That door, if it can be kept open, keep the door open. Don't close the door, please. Respected scholars, brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh. The verse in question, verse 11 of chapter 24 of the Holy Quran, discusses arguably one of the most famous incidents in Islamic history, known as the incident of the Ifk. An incident which requires a thorough analysis, for it is an incident which has legal, theological, as well as ethical repercussions. And indeed, an incident from which many an important lesson may be observed and many an example may be derived. An incident with a historical base affecting the lives of many of the prominent companions in early Islamic history and with a contemporary significance in our life today. The word ifk is translated in the English language as the slanderous lie. The verse in question, according to certain schools in Islam, refers to the slanderous lie that was posited against the wife of the Prophet Aisha. The slanderous lie that was posited was against her in the sixth year after Hijrah, that she had committed adultery with Safwan ibn al-Mu'attal, and that because of this, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala had absolved her of the act of adultery and wanted to reprimand those slanderers within the community at the time. As we know, slanderous accusations are a disease within any community. When a person makes a slanderous accusation against any human being, that could end up leading to the very breakup of the fabric of the community. It could lead to the end of the reputation of an individual. It could lead to the end of the reputation of a family. And it could lead to the end of the reputation of a whole community. Unfortunately, today in many Muslim communities you find that slander is something normal. It's normal for a person to make a false accusation about a member of the community. And this goes against the very ethos of the Holy Quran, and that the Quran on many occasions seeks to remind us that if anyone comes to you with news, always seek to verify that news. As in, if someone today comes and tells you, did you hear about this person? I heard X, I heard Y, I heard Z. When you listen to them without saying, have you heard all the sides of the argument? Are you sure you know what the truth is? You find that you may end up placing an ifk, a slanderous lie, on members of the community. Hence, the religion of Islam on many occasions would state, give 70 benefits of the doubt when you hear a slander against someone. If someone came to you today and said that, did you hear this about person X or family Y? Don't straight away give in and say yes. If that's what you're telling me, then that's what I'm going to believe. Therefore, you found that this incident tried to address this issue, that slander against any member of the community is great, but slander against a member of the household of the Holy Prophet is even greater. You find that if there is someone who is from the household of the Prophet and you're willing to place a slanderous accusation against them, then this is seen as the most grievous of acts within society. And that's why you find 20 verses in the Quran dedicated to the incident of the Ifk. From chapter 24 verse number 11 until chapter 24 verse 31 is a full analysis of what happened at the Ifk incident. Therefore, this incident is vital that we study it, because the context of chapter 24 is the discussion on adultery and its punishments. Not just adultery and its punishments. Those who slander and accuse someone of adultery, their punishment is even severe as sometimes the one who's committed adultery. Therefore, let's dissect the incident of the Ifk in depth in order that we're able to understand the origin of this whole episode. I'd like to analyze this in a number of stages. Number one, what exactly happened at that caravan when Aisha came back with Safwan ibn al-Mu'attal? Number two, what were the rumors that were made in Medinian society? And how did the Prophet, according to certain schools, go about finding out whether Aisha had committed adultery or not? Number three, and very importantly, how do we look at the science of hadith on an incident like the incident of the Ifk? By looking at the chain of the narrators, by looking at the text itself, and by doing a historical analysis of the date when the incident took place. Number four, how was this incident used against Imam Amir al-Mu'mineen as a slander that he was the one who accused Aisha of adultery? Number five, and of the utmost importance, who is it that we then believe was the actual accuser and the actual accused? And number six, how devastating is it when someone accuses your pregnancy and your child not to be yours? Let's try and dissect this in order that we understand the whole issue in complete depth. When we look at the incident of the Ifk is narrated to have taken place by Aisha herself. Aisha herself narrates that the incident took place in the sixth year after Hijrah. What happened was, the Holy Prophet had just achieved his victory at the Battle of Khandaq. After achieving his victory, there was an expedition which he wanted to leave on. The expedition was known as Ghazwat al-Muraisi'ah, or in some traditions, Ghazwat Bani Mustalaq. The Holy Prophet, before he used to leave for any expedition, he would cast lots as to which wife he should take with him on the expedition. Because you have to achieve an ultimate justice with each wife in the terms of what you spend. And if you're going to travel, then you're going to tell the wives, there is no problem if I take one of you, let's cast a lot. The narrations mention to us that Aisha was taken and that Aisha went with him. And what would happen in those days? She'd have a carriage on top of the camel. She'd be inside that carriage and there would be the help of a couple of personalities in the group who would make sure that what they would do is that they would make sure that they carried the carriage and they place it on the camel. When they were returning back from this expedition, you know, when you return from any expedition, obviously you want a place where you're going to get off from your carriage. You want to go towards the areas of privacy. So you want to go towards the areas of privacy. In those days, they don't have a service station for you to stop and go to the WC. In those days, what would happen is you'd go into a very far distance, somewhere where nobody could see you at all. You'd be, for example, in an area which is blocked, no one could see you. And what would happen would be that you'd go to that area of privacy, do what you have to do, and then you'd return back to the camp and the camp would set off. So the Holy Prophet was with the companions there, and the narration tell us that Aisha had decided to set off. She went into a faraway area, And then upon her return, when she was coming back so that she joins, when those people came to carry the carriage back onto the camel, they thought that she was already in there. She narrates that because of how light I was, they thought that I was already in there because they didn't feel any heaviness anyway whatsoever. So what happened was, when they carried me, when the carriage was carried onto the camel, I still hadn't returned back. Why was she late? She used to have this Yemeni necklace which used to have quartz on it. And what had happened was that the necklace had, in a way, dispersed, had broken. So she collected the beads. Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad. When she collected the beads, all of them together, as soon as she collected the beads together, she came back and she noticed that that whole caravan has set off. There's no one there in the caravan. So she said, I decided that I will sit down and that I will wait. Surely they're all going to return, as in they'll notice that I'm not in the caravan. And when they notice that I'm not in the caravan, they're going to return back for me. What happened was that she was waiting and she fell asleep in that area. When she fell asleep, who had also lagged behind from the caravan? Safwan ibn al-Mu'attal. Safwan ibn al-Mu'attal had lagged behind. He wanted to also go back onto the caravan. So he said to Aisha, he came, he saw this person sleeping there. When he looked at her, she said, in those days we didn't use a niqab covering until the verses of hijab were revealed in terms of the niqab. Before that, we'd only cover our hair. Then later, we'd cover our faces. She said, what happened was that he saw me, and the first thing he said was, Inna lillah wa inna ilayhi raji'un. For he recognized me from before, and he knew that I was the wife of the Prophet. So he then took me with him, and we went and we entered Medina. When we entered Medina, she says, it was the time of Dhuhr. As soon as we entered Medina, everyone looked at me and him. We clearly hadn't come with the caravan. We clearly had come alone with each other, and we entered Medina. As soon as we entered Medina, she said that I noticed when I met the Prophet that there was a change in the behavior of the Prophet with me. He wasn't as soft with me. He wasn't, for example, as calming with me. There was a difference in his attitude with me. I also fell ill in that period. I fell ill for a month. And I was beginning to wonder, what is happening at this time? Why is the Prophet's behavior changed with me? She said, so I was with the mother of Musattah. I was with the mother of Musattah. When me and her were walking, she tripped over a rock or a stone that was there. When she tripped over, she said, curse be on Musattah. So I said to her, why are you cursing Musattah when you know he was in the army of Rasulullah at Badr? He's the son of yours. She replied by saying, what? She replied by saying, oh Aisha, have you not heard? She said, what is it? She said, there's an accusation going around in Medina. People believe that you've committed adultery with Safwan ibn al-Mu'attal. Straight away, she says, I ran to the house of my parents. And when I ran to the house, and I want you, all of you, when you're listening to the story, to please bear with me on all the names so you understand the analysis. When she went into the house, she went into the house of Abu Bakr, her father. And she went in, she saw her mother, Rahman. And she saw who? Her brother, Abdul Rahman. She began to cry and cry and cry because she realized there had now been an accusation from a number of personalities, four main personalities in Medina, against her that she committed adultery. Who were these four? Hassan bin Thabit. Al-Musattah, number two. Number three, the narrations mentioned to us, Hamna, the sister of Zainab, daughter of Jahash. And number four, Abdullah ibn Ubay, the chief of the hypocrites. These four had made an accusation on Aisha. She had been crying in her parents' house, crying and crying. Of course, Rasulullah all this time had heard the news that Aisha had committed adultery with Safwan. And so what did he do? Rasulullah, at this moment, when he heard the news, he went to inquire from his companions what they thought. So he went to one companion, he said to him, what's your opinion about what happened with Aisha? He said to him, Ya Rasulullah, the Lord has protected you from the fly when it sits with you, for the fly can carry najasa, impurity. If your Lord can protect you from the najasa of a fly, you think your Lord will not protect your honor as well? That's one opinion. Another companion said to him, what? Another companion is meant to have said to him that, Ya Rasulullah, there is no way that this incident would have taken place. We do not believe in it. So Rasulullah said, let me go and ask Osama bin Zayd and Ali ibn Abi Talib. This is very important. So I went to Osama bin Zayd. Now I've mentioned to you a whole host of names. Each one of them I'm going to come back to in a second. Went to Osama bin Zayd. He said to him, Osama, what do you think? And historians here will definitely be able to do their mathematics quickly about what we're talking about. He went to Osama. He said to him, Osama, what do you think? Osama looked at him and he said to him, Ya Rasulullah, she would never do such an act. There is no way this would happen. Then he went to Ali ibn Abi Talib. Ali ibn Abi Talib said, Ya Rasulullah, there are many women out there. Why are you concerned with her? There are so many other women. Divorce her. And we can even ask her servant, Burayra. Her servant, what's her name? Burayra. When they went to ask her servant, the servant turns around and says that no, she is not of that type of nature. She is not of that type of character. So Ali ibn Abi Talib beat the servant because he wanted a confession from her. So he beat her and beat her and beat her until he wanted the confession to come out. Rasulullah knew all of this. So Rasulullah decided, let me go to Aisha's house. Let me go to Aisha, speak to her. So he said, Aisha, were you the one who committed this or no? Please tell me. I don't mind. If you committed it, we'll open the door of Tawbah. If you haven't committed it, then tell me. No answer. She'd look at her father Abu Bakr, look at her mother Umm Rahman. She'd say to all of them, please answer, please answer. No answer. And then Aisha would say what? Aisha would turn around and say that even if I tell you I did or if I tell you I didn't, this is not a situation which I'm going to win in. If I tell you I did, there's a punishment. If I tell you I didn't, no one's going to believe me. Until Rasulullah, Aisha narrates, until Rasulullah received the report from his Lord that he has absolved me from the accusations of these personalities who had accused me of committing adultery. So she says, Rasulullah came to my house. He had a beaming smile when he came to my house. And then he wanted to hold my hand to tell me that Allah has absolved you. So I removed my hand from him. And I told my father, is your companion now happy with what his Lord has told him? Rasulullah then makes the announcement that what shall I do with those who have accused Aisha of this act? So Sa'ad ibn Mu'adh, very important name in this analysis, Sa'ad ibn Mu'adh said to him, Ya Rasulullah, if he's an Osi, you know, you got the Aws and the Khazraj in Medina, the two famous tribes. If he's an Osi, we'll punish him. Then Sa'ad ibn Abada, another important name in this analysis, Sa'ad ibn Abada said, you're a liar. There's no way you people are going to punish. You Osis will never punish. I'm a Khazraji. Then Usaid bin Hudayr, another important name. Usaid bin Hudayr then said, Sa'ad bin Ubadah, you're a liar. You're a munafiq. You're a munafiq. There was an attack between all of them and they started throwing slippers, everything became a big fight. And then Surah 49 of the Quran, of the verse when the Muslims come together and fight, that verse was revealed. This therefore, what was it become known as? It became known as the incident of the Ifk. That if you go anywhere in the Muslim world today, and you say to them, what's the incident of the Ifk? They say to you, the incident of the Ifk is when Abdullah ibn Ubay and Hassan ibn Thabit and a few others accused Aisha of committing adultery with Safwan, and Ali ibn Abi Talib told the Prophet, divorce her, there are many women. And Ali ibn Abi Talib tried to force a confession out of the servant of Aisha. Until today, if you even try to question the incident of the Ifk, straight away someone looks at you and says, how dare you? This is only about Aisha. Now let me dissect this. How do I dissect this? Firstly, let me look at the chain of the Ifk. Who narrates? In the science of hadith, we have three key areas. We want to look at the chain. Where did we get the hadith from? We want to look at the text. Does the text make sense or is it contradictory? Number three, I want to look at the dates historically. I want all of you to understand how this analysis works, so that once and for all we can make it clear that this has got nothing to do with Aisha and the sixth year after Hijrah. Let me make this clear tonight. How? When you look at the isnad, first and foremost, all of you noticed in my discussion, who did I keep repeating is the narrator? Aisha, the accused, is narrating about the accusation and how badly she was treated. In most places, that is very suspect when you're the sole narrator, isn't it? As in, normally people will say, well, who else are the witnesses who are there? Aisha herself is the chief narrator of this hadith. However, someone turns around and says, but I've seen other names associated with the hadith. Yes, Aisha at the end, she's the chief narrator. When you go to the hadith, it says, Aisha said. But they say there are other chief narrators as well who you have to look into. No problem. Let's look at those other chief narrators. The first name they always mention, who they say also narrated this tradition, was Abu Hurairah. Yes? That's the first name they mention. Why is there a problem if Abu Hurairah is the one who is narrating this incident? In which year did I say this incident supposedly happened? Which year? Six. Abu Hurairah became a Muslim in which year? Seven. Abu Hurairah met the Holy Prophet and became a Muslim in the last few years of his life. What he was known as was a person who used to sleep on the ledge by what you have today, if you imagine the ledge by the grave of Rasulullah, the Suffa. He was known as one of the Ashab Suffa. Abu Hurairah, if he is a narrator of this incident, no one was listening to Abu Hurairah on the sixth day after Hijrah. Abu Hurairah, people started to listen to him after the seventh year after Hijrah. But if you ask any scholar of hadith, they'll turn around and say, Abu Hurairah, seventh year after Hijrah. So let's please put Abu Hurairah on the side. Number two, who do they say next? Ibn Abbas. Ibn Abbas came to Medina in the eighth year after Hijrah. This incident took place in which year? Sixth year after Hijrah. Let's put him on the side, please. Thirdly, who do they narrate? Abdullah ibn Umar ibn al-Khattab. They say he's also a narrator of this hadith. I reply back by saying Abdullah bin Umar doesn't narrate this incident. Abdullah bin Umar says that when Rasulullah used to go on expeditions, he used to cast lots. So Aisha told me when they went on the Ghazwa of Bani Mustalaq. In other words, who's the narrator of this hadith? Him or Aisha? Aisha. So we have Ibn Abbas, we have Abu Hurairah, we have Abdullah ibn Umar. Another narrator of this hadith who they bring forward, Masruq. They say Masruq was one of the chief narrators. Masruq was only in Medina and seen as a great Muslim after Rasulullah died. Rasulullah died in which year after Hijrah? 11th year after Hijrah. This incident took place in which year after Hijrah? 6th year after Hijrah. Let's look at another of the narrators of the hadith. There is a person who's seen as a narrator called Ghandar. This person, his name is within the narrators. This person, Ghandar Mughaffal, he's not taken as someone in the world of hadith who is to be used as a hujjah. This person, Ghandar, why people don't take him? Because this person used to confuse a lot of his statements. Even in some cases, when you hear his statements, they don't make any sense whatsoever. This person, I remember reading about him in the books of Rijal, reading about him, you know what it says? It says once this person, well, he brought fish home to his family. So he said to his family, he said to them, I bought this fish home, do you mind cooking the fish? So his family looked at him and said, okay, no problem. So he fell asleep. His family thought, you know what, we'll eat all of this fish. But to make the guy think that, you know, he ate it as well, we'll slap some of the fish on his hand. So when he woke up, he said, where's my fish? This is the person we're meant to take this hadith from. He said, where's my fish? They said to him, you ate it. He said, what do you mean I ate it? He said, you ate it. He said, I was asleep. He said, no, smell your hand. So he smelled his hand. He's like, yes, you're right, I maybe ate it, but I'm still starving actually at the moment. This person, Ghandar, am I meant to take a hadith from him? That's another of the narrators. Another of the narrators is who? Is Abu Atiq. Abu Atiq is another of the narrators, and he was known as a person who was a drunkard in Arabia. When Abu Qatada spoke to Abu Atiq, he said to him, Abu Qatada tells him, that are you the one who I've been told drinks alcohol? And he would sing, which of the alcohols did I drink? The Babylonian or the Roman? And so on. I don't think I'll take a hadith from this guy when he tells me something. Then another of the persons who's meant to have narrated this incident about Aisha is who? Sa'id ibn al-Musayyib. Sa'id ibn al-Musayyib is meant to have narrated this whole incident, and that Imam Ali did this and Imam Ali did that. Sa'id ibn al-Musayyib is a person who, when the janazah came out for our fourth Imam, when they told him, why don't you pray in the janazah of Zain al-Abidin? He said, two ruk'ah, mustahab, is more worthy than me praying for Zain al-Abidin. I take from him? Him? What do you think he's going to put about Ali ibn Abi Talib in an incident? He's the same person who they told him, would you pray behind Hajjaj bin Yusuf al-Thaqafi? I said, no human being would pray behind Hajjaj. The worst people wouldn't pray behind Hajjaj. He said, what do you mean Hajjaj? I've prayed behind worse than Hajjaj bin Yusuf. This person is another narrator of the hadith. In other words, what do we find? The incident of the ifk, if you study it from the chains, Aisha is the sole narrator. But if there are other names who have been placed there, then those other names who have been placed there, you will find that it is a contradiction in the dates, that these people had nothing to do with the incident. That's number one. Number two, when we look at any hadith, after the chain, we look at the text of the hadith, isn't it? We look at the wording. Is it contradictory or no? When you look at the wording of this hadith, what do we find? The first thing is, I'm very surprised that Rasulullah, who's got security guards looking after the carriage of his wife, his security guards would walk away on a journey and not know that his wife is not in there. As in, you tell me, if you as a normal human being, you're not with the Holy Prophet, you're on a journey, it's in the middle of the night, and you know the person in that carriage is the wife of the most important human in human history. When you carry the carriage, are you seriously going to be thinking, yes, considering it is light, she must be in there? Firstly, security guards, this text doesn't make any sense. That Rasulullah, firstly, these security guards did not do their work. Secondly, we have traditions that the Holy Prophet was more protective about his wives than even Prophet Ibrahim alayhi salam. And we know how protective Prophet Ibrahim alayhi salam was, don't we? The Holy Prophet was more. You tell me that, you know, in the tradition, you know what she narrates? She narrates in the tradition that the Prophet wouldn't leave my carriage. He loved my carriage. So how comes all of a sudden on the way home, the Holy Prophet decides the whole journey back home, I don't even know what's happening in your carriage. If he's that attached to your carriage, then why doesn't he know what's happening in your carriage at all? That's number two. Number three, on your journey home to Medina, you're not going to get off the carriage to go to the bathroom again or WC at that time. What, you're going to go the whole journey without getting off a bit? They would get off every few junctures before they get there. Didn't anyone think, let us just check that carriage? Why is no one come off? Let's just check even. Ya Rasulullah, you are mahram to Aisha. You open the carriage and check. Number four, she says that Safwan, who came with me, he had no attraction to woman. He wasn't a man of woman. In other words, he wasn't a man who was known to be around women. So you can't accuse him of adultery or anything like this. And that he was of the Ansar. Point number one, Safwan was not of the Ansar. He was of the Muhajirun. That's the clear contradiction in the hadith. He was a migrant from Mecca, not of the people of Medina. Point number two, Safwan was not known as a person of woman. Safwan. Go read about him, Safwan ibn al-Mu'attal. Read what it says about Safwan ibn al-Mu'attal. To the extent the narration says, his wife used to complain to Rasulullah, Ya Rasulullah, my husband doesn't allow me to fast. The Holy Prophet said, why? Why, Safwan, don't you allow her? He said, Ya Rasulullah, I can't take being away from my wife. And when she is fasting, that means I'm away from her for a few hours, and this I can't take. That person is far away from woman? As in this person, what is it? He's telling his wife, if you fast, I go crazy. That person far away? Even later on, we have hadiths. He had two children. Say he's not with many women, but he's got two children who Rasulullah said they are like two crows who look like each other. In other words, the person was around woman. The person was a person who would be around woman. To make an accusation like that is not warranted. That's not